Chodesh Tov, everyone. Boker Tov, everyone. Michael.
Can everyone hear me while Michael tries to work on the microphone? Yes?
Hey, I'm wondering if you get feedback. It's on the microphone. Do we still hear that feedback, that pinging? Okay, it might just be the way we position. I think it's also the way we position the microphone, so I'll try to. Okay, Chodesh Tov, everyone. I want to jump right in because we have a lot we're going to try to accomplish this morning. I want to begin with a text that's actually not on your source sheets. It's a very important text to contextualize everything we're going to try to talk about in terms of the Yom Tov of Purim, the great, awesome day of Purim. You know, there are Jews, you know, that I would call Tisha B'Av Jews that are very stoic. And then there are Jews that I would call Purim Jews. So anyone who's ever met me will clearly categorize me as a Purim Jew, Baruch Hashem. Jews that try to be besimcha, try to embrace what Purim is all about throughout the entire year. And today, I want to kind of dive in and really delve into what Purim is really all about. Now, there's a teaching of the Tikkuni Zohar that's really going to set the tone for everything we're going to look at this morning. And the Tikkuni Zohar, one of the great early works of Jewish mysticism, says that Yom HaKippurim, okay, the day of Yom Kippur, Nikra Shem, because it's a Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippur gets its name. The words Yom Kippurim are meant to teach us that Yom Kippur is a day that's like Purim. Now, what do we do with that idea? How do we understand this parallel, this connection, if you will, that the mystics see between Yom Kippur, that day of awe, right? We call Yom Kippur a day of awe. Now, for many people, that idea of Yom Kippur being a day of awe means it's an awful day. They conjure up images of misery and being terrified. So that's a problem also. And perhaps maybe what we'll glean from this discussion about what Purim's about this morning will also help us to improve our understanding of what Yom Kippur is about as well. But for many people, Yom Kippur is a day of complete awe and trepidation, okay, an awful day, the way they experience it, while Purim is a day of utter celebration, complete revelry, complete hefker, you know, excitement and fun and everything goes. So how do we understand this idea that Yom Kippur is compared to Purim? So take a look at text number one. This is just quoting from the Nesiv HaShalom, the son of a Rebbe, who's going to quote an earlier Hasidic master, Rabbi Yisrael Virgin. And he says, "Dehine itta b'Rebbe HaKadosh Mirgin Zchuta Yagen Aleinu." And we learn in the name, it was taught in the name of Rabbi Yisrael Friedman of Virgin, "May his merit be bestowed upon us, Shepurim od yoter gavoa miyama kippurim." So the Rishon Rabbi said that Purim is even greater than Yom Kippur. Kedeita b'tikunei Zohar, as we learn from the Tikkunei Zohar, sheyom hakippurim nikra yom kippurim. As the Tikkunei Zohar that we spoke about in the introduction taught us that Yom Kippur is a day that's likened to Purim. And the Rebbe explains, the Rishon Rabbi explains, v'katan nitla b'gadol. If Yom Kippur is being compared to Purim, then what must it mean? That Yom Kippur is the Katan, is the lesser important one, being compared to the greater holiday of Purim. Wait a minute. Did we just read this correctly? Is the Rishon Rebbe suggesting that Purim, this holiday that seems to be all about, you know, having fun and all about, you know, just chaos, okay, fun chaos, is somehow greater than that day of Yom Kippur, that day that we all count down to and have on our calendars months in advance? How can we understand that? What are we meant to understand and glean from this teaching from the Rebbe of Rishon? Okay, we're now going to hear, that's question number one, we're going to come back to that in terms of how could it be that if Purim is such an awesome day, a day that's greater than Yom Kippur, how could it be that Purim is a day of such silliness? Okay, if it's a day that's an awesome day, that's greater than Yom Kippur, How can it be that Purim is a day of such celebration, happiness, even silliness? We're going to come back to that question. That's our introduction. Now we're going to move on, and we're going to hear from another of my spiritual heroes. This is Rabbi Clonimus Kama Shapiro, Zecher Tzadok V'Kadosh Livracha, also known as the Eish Kodesh, also known as the Rebbe of Piasetzna, also known as the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto. Reclamus Kama Shapiro was a great, great Hasidic master, the brother-in-law of the Kudzhitzer Rebbe, and he spent the last 3 years of his life as the last rabbinic personality living in the Warsaw Ghetto. And much of the writings, much of the teachings that we have from the Eish Kodesh, the Rebbe of Piasetzna, the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto, are writings that were found years later that the Rebbe had buried amongst the archives that were buried in milk cans in the walls of the Warsaw Ghetto. It's a whole incredible story for another time in terms of how these milk cans were actually located and how his writings were identified. But what we have from the Rebbe, most of the writings that we have from the Rebbe are teachings or notes of teachings that he shared during those 3 years that he was in the Warsaw Ghetto. So these are actually, imagine being the rabbi of a community, of the community in the Warsaw Ghetto, and this day of Purim, this day of fun and celebration and silliness comes on the calendar, and now you have to find some way to speak about this day of Purim, in the depths of hell, the Warsaw Ghetto. So that's the context of where these words were shared. It's a very short idea. It's not, you can imagine, he didn't really give a long sermon on Purim in the Warsaw Ghetto, but these are the Rebbe's words. So take a look, this is text number two. Itabit Tikunei Zohar HaKadosh. He's gonna quote our same text that the original Rebbe quoted in the opening text. Shepurim ki Yom HaKippurim. That Purim is like Yom Kippur. Efshar Mirameis, it's possible that this is alluding to and meant to teach us, Gam Lazeh, even with this, Shekamo Yom HaKippurim, Hata'anit V'atshuva B'Yom Zeh, Lo Im Rotzeh Tam Adam L'Sotam Oseh. The gist is on Yom Kippur. The fasting and the tshuva that we do on Yom Kippur, we don't do those things, the fasting and the tshuva and the alchets and all these things, necessarily because we are excited to have a day where we don't eat, and excited to have a day where we're in shul all day, and excited to have a day where we're clapping our chest all day long. That we don't do those things necessarily because we want to do them, says the Rebbe, but rather, rak ben im rotzeh ben lo, but rather we do these things, we fast and we do tshuva on this day of Yom Kippur, whether we really want to or not, okay? Mikayma mipnei gzeres HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We do it because it's the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem has instructed us to do so. Kein gam simchas Purim, says the Rebbe. So too, the celebration that we're meant to feel and experience on Purim. Lo rak im adam yatzmo b'simcha. Okay. Not only if a person is actually happy, or if he finds himself in circumstances where it's natural for him to be happy, is he required to rejoice on this day of Purim? But also, even if he's depressed and brokenhearted, his spirit is completely broken. He has to, he's required. It's a chok. It's an inexplicable requirement that a person needs to allow some spark of happiness, of simcha, of joy, to enter into his heart on Purim, no matter what. Imagine saying these words in the Warsaw Ghetto. But he goes right there, he continues. V'chein gami malo lamata. So too in the heavens, and what's projected from the heavens down to us below. Just as we say that Yom Kippur, the essence of the day of Yom Kippur itself brings kapara, brings atonement. Okay? V'afilu im lo hashlim kol tshuvato omer Rebbe shemechaper lo. And as Rebbe taught us in the Gemara in Yuma, that even if a person hasn't done complete tshuva up till that day of Yom Kippur, the day of Yom Kippur itself gives kapara, gives atonement to such a person, even without completing his tshuva process. Kein gam bepurim, af shelo haya ish hayisraeli besimcha kafi shetzarich liyot. Umimela kol avorotel shebepurim lo hayta b'shleimut. Mikol makom, hayeshua v'asimcha shapurim poel al Yisrael, gam ata poel v'yoseh. So too on Purim, that even if a person is not in the headspace where he is able to be in the normal frame of mind that was meant to be on Purim, of rejoicing, and therefore all the mitzvahs that we might do on that day are not in the normal way, complete way that we would normally embrace those mitzvahs. Imagine having to give Mishloach Manos on Purim in the Warsaw Ghetto. Imagine. There were no fancy, you know, cardboard boxes with clowns on them. Okay? It was probably a stale potato and a hard crust of bread. That was probably, if that was probably Mishloach Manos in the Warsaw Ghetto. So the Rebbe says, even if we find ourselves in circumstances where our avodas Purim, the mitzvahs that we're meant to do on this day of Purim, are somehow lacking in the shlemus that we normally experience, in the wholeness, in the entire experience of simcha shel mitzvah, even so, the Yeshua and the ultimate simcha, the redemption, salvation, and ultimate happiness that this day of Purim brings into existence, that comes down from the heavens, so too, that's coming, that's actually happening mystically, metaphysically, whether we're in the physical headspace for that simcha or not. The day of Purim brings Yeshuot, brings miracles, brings redemption into the world. On this day of Purim, the Simcha and Yeshuos of Purim are not only being commemorated down here on earth, but they're emanating from the heavens, says the Rebbe. Even now, says the Rebbe in the Warsaw Ghetto. So what do we do with that idea? What do we do with that idea? It's a very powerful idea. It's a very challenging idea. What do we do with this idea that Purim, no matter what our personal circumstances may be, no matter what circumstances we may find ourselves in, that Purim somehow metaphysically brings Yeshuot into this world, whether we're in the headspace of rejoicing or not? Okay, so in order for us to understand what Purim is really all about and address these two questions, again, our first question was that if the Chazal compare Purim to Yom Kippur, and as the original Rebbe says, that Yom Kippur is being compared to Purim, therefore Purim is greater than Yom Kippur, how do we understand that this day of silliness is somehow greater than Yom Kippur? That was question number one. And question number two that the Piasetzner Rebbe brings for us in developing this idea of the parallel between Yom Kippur and Purim even further, the Piasetzner Rebbe presents us with a second challenge. And that is that if Yom Kippur brings kapara no matter what, no matter what our circumstances are, whether we've done tshuva or not, then Purim must bring Yeshuot, redemption, and simcha, and ultimate joy into this world, whether we're in that headspace currently or not. Okay? So how do we understand the power of Purim and what this awesome Yom Tov of Purim is all about? And I'm going to take that question a step further. If Purim is indeed greater than Yom Kippur, okay, then how could it be that this is a day where such Yeshuot, such incredible salvation comes into the world? How could it be that one of the fundamental, I won't say principles, but one of the fundamental behaviors associated with this awesome Yom Tov Purim is to drink to the point that we can no longer identify who is Mordechai and who is Haman? How could it be? If this is a day that's on a higher level of Yom Kippur, how could it become normative practice that we get completely blitzed, that we lose any sense, seemingly if we at face value, of differentiating between good and bad, right and wrong? How do we understand what Purim is really all about? And with that as our backdrop, we're now going to turn our page. L'chaim, since we're talking about drinking, L'chaim. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaMelech Shach HaKol Yevro. It's water. It's not vodka. Don't worry. Okay. We're going to begin with that famous Gemara that we just spoke about. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Zayin Amud Beis, Amar Rava. Rava said, "Mechayev inesh lebesume beporia ad lo yada ben arar haman levarach Mordechai." A person is required at face value. That's how most people read this Gemara. We're going to talk about this Gemara in greater detail in a moment. To become intoxicated on Purim until they can no longer distinguish and know the difference between cursed Haman and blessed Mordechai. Rabba and Rabbi Zeira avadu sudas Purim bahadei hadadi. Rabba and Rabbi Zeira decided they're going to have their Purim suda together. Ibasum, they became intoxicated. Okay, so by the way, there's an important nekuda here. Seemingly, what's introduced in terms of the an essential part of the suda of the meal we're supposed to have on Purim? What? They became intoxicated. There is an idea in terms of what Sudas Purim is meant to be about, and we're going to come back to this, that there's supposed to be alcohol consumed, wine at the very least consumed, at that Sudas Purim. We're going to talk about what that means in a moment and why. Kam Rabba Shchate Le Rebbe Zeir. What happened? They got so blitzed that Rabba lost it, and he shechted Rebbe Zeira. Okay? What happened? Don't worry, it doesn't end there. Lemachar by Rachme Vachaye. Okay? The next day he davened for his recovery, meaning Rabba felt bad, and Rebbe Zeira was brought back to life. Lishana, the next year, Amale, Rabba comes up to his buddy Rebbe Zeira and says, "Hey, Netimad Navid Sudat Purim Bahadi Adadi. Hey, maybe you want to come again to my house for the Purim Suda." How do you think Rabbi Zeira reacted to this warm invitation? Take a look at the Gemara. Amale lo bechol shata v'shata mitrachish nisa. Rabbi Zeira says, "Wait a minute here. We can't rely on a miracle happening every single time." So, what are we meant to glean from this Gemara? Mechayev inesh lebesumei bepuria. So, seemingly, it seems to suggest that a person is required to get intoxicated so they can no longer distinguish between good and bad. And then the Hemshech of the Gemara tells a story where someone got so blitzed where they lost control, totally lost control, and endangered those around them. So what do we do with this story? So we're going to take a look at a number of halachic texts. Before we come back to the mystical side of things, we're going to take a look over the next few minutes at a number of halachic texts, which will help us, hopefully, to understand and contextualize what this idea of drinking in Purim is really meant to represent. So we're going to begin with the Rambam. That's a text, I guess it's 2 on your sheet, right? Or 4. How's it numbered? 4. It's number 4 on your sheet. Okay, the Rambam says, "Usudas Purim sha'asa balayla lo yatsa yidei chavasa." So the first thing we learn is what? The chiyuv of a suda Purim, of a Purim suda, is not at night after the Megillah reading. I know that the minhag ha'olam is we have a Purim party and a big celebration, and heaven forbid Jews should celebrate without having a meal, without having food. But the mitzvah of what we call Sudas Purim is not that celebration, that party we have at night, but rather it's the meal that we have during Purim daytime. Okay? So if you did only a meal at night, lo yatsa yidei chavasa, says the Rambam. You wouldn't fulfill your obligation, says the Rambam. Okay. Ketzar chavas sudazu. What are the requirements of this Purim meal, this Purim feast? Sheyuchal basar, you should eat meat preferably, and you should make a very nice meal in accordance with everything, the best of your capabilities. Vishote yayin, and you should drink wine, ad shishtaker, until you become intoxicated, v'yuradim b'shichruto, and that you'll lie down in your drunkenness. So the Rambam, the Rambam says 2 important things. First of all, he says that the drinking we do on Purim is supposed to be part and parcel of the Sudas Purim during the daytime. Okay? And he says that Sudas Purim is specifically during the daytime and not the night before. So there's no mitzvah to get blitzed at night on Purim, okay? But rather the mitzvah of drinking on Purim is to drink wine as part of your Purim Seudah and lie down to take a nap after you drank a little bit of wine, okay? That's seemingly how the Rambam couches it. Now we're going to take this a little further. We're going to jump ahead a few hundred years, and we're going to hear from two contemporaries of one another in the late 19th and early 20th century. First, we're going to hear from Rabbi Yechiel Mechel Epstein, known as the Aruch HaShulchan. And then we're also going to hear from the Chavetz Chaim in the Be'er Halacha, one of his super commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. So we're going to begin first with the Aruch HaShulchan. And the Aruch HaShulchan is going to point out that there seems to be a stira, a contradiction between Rabbi Yosef Karo's original writings in the Beit Yosef, his first halachic compendium that he put together, and his later writing, the Shulchan Aruch, that became the codex of Jewish law that we're also familiar with. So this is text number 5. Anan Rabbeinu Beit Yosef, b'sifra gadol ketav, b'shem orchot chayim, v'zeh l'shano, chayiv inner shabsume b'poria lo shishtaker. Oh! So the Beit Yosef, in his original work, so the person when drinking on Purim is required to imbibe wine on Purim, but he says, lo shiyishtaker, but not to become intoxicated. Shashichris iser gomer, because drunkenness is an absolute prohibition. Ve'ein lecha aveira gadola mizu, and there's no greater aveira than this. Shehu goreim legila arayis, v'shvichas damim, v'kam aver zlatan, right? Because it could lead to, God forbid, inappropriate conduct, sexual conduct, inappropriate, dangerous behavior, like bloodshed, like we saw in our Gemara, or many other serious transgressions like this. Ach sheyishte yoter milimudot ma'at ad kan lashana. Okay, but rather, what are we required to do? To drink a little bit more than we are normally accustomed to. And that's what the Beis Yosef says in, Rabbi Yosef Karo says in the Beis Yosef. V'kasha, the imkein, my adla yada. So, but the question that the Aruch HaShulchan asks says, okay, that's nice, but how do we understand then what the Gemara says that you're required to drink to the point of no longer recognizing the difference, knowing the difference between good and bad? Okay, it's very nice that he says, be in control, that it's a terrible aveira to drink, to be so drunk that you lose it. But how do we understand the Gemara? The whole source for drinking that wine on Purim seems to be what? Specifically, to get the point of no longer knowing, of being blitzed, of being confused. V'im mefarish keza perush. And he says, more than that, I haven't figured out a proper explanation in terms of how these words here in the Beis Yosef seem to jive with the contradictory statement that Rabbi Yosef Karo himself codifies in the Shulchan Aruch, where he says that you are required to get drunk to the point of not being able to differentiate between blessed, accursed Haman and blessed Mordechai. Now, in the notes here, he suggests, V'ulai yifreshu ad. But perhaps the key to understanding this is the definition and interpretation of the word ad, until. Velo ad bichlal, and not up till and including. Meaning, a person is required to drink a little bit on Purim until he feels he's in the zone. Okay? Once he or she has entered that zone of, I'm feeling a little bit giddy or intoxicated, that's ad. I've gotten to that point. It doesn't say ad v'chlal. It doesn't mean getting to the point of losing it completely. It means coming to the edge of getting up to that point. Okay? And he continues, u'ma'asa yesh drachek min ha'shichrus, and halacha l'maisa, practically speaking, we have to distance ourselves from drunkenness, and more specifically, mixing wine and hard liquor, okay, because when you do that and you get drunk, you end up vomiting, but rather, just like the Rambam suggested, you should drink a little bit more than you normally do and go to sleep for a little while. Okay, so seemingly from the Aruch HaShulchan here, we have the famous statement. He kind of touches on a statement that many of us who spent time in college have probably heard: wine before liquor, never been sicker, right? He says, don't mix wine and hard alcohol at the, because that leads to not having a fun time. That leads to being sick, and that's not what the mitzvah is. Okay, let's go on. The Chafetz Chaim is going to take this a step further. And the Chafetz Chaim is going to be very much consistent with what we've seen up till now, but he's going to add another wrinkle. And let's take a look. He says, "V'im tomar eichi chavu chazal mash niskar b'torah b'neviim b'kama mekamot hashichrut l'michshal gadol." He asks the question: how could it be that our sages seem to require something, meaning to become intoxicated, where there are many, many examples throughout the Tanakh where we see people becoming intoxicated, having that intoxication become a tremendous impediment and stumbling block to them. Okay? We know many stories where people throughout the Tanakh where people got drunk and Nebuch, terrible things happened to them. V'yesh lomar, it's possible to suggest, says the Chafetz Chaim, "Mimnei shekol hanisim shenasu liYisrael b'mei Achashverosh hayu al yidei mishta." Look at this idea. All of the miracles, all of the stages of the story of Purim, the miracle of Purim, come together through the format of a mishta, of a wine banquet, a drinking banquet. Because the story begins with Vashti being dethroned, right, and decapitated ultimately because of the Mishteh, because she was invited to Achashverosh's wine banquet and she refused. And only because of that does Esther become the queen. And Haman, the undoing of Haman, when is Haman revealed as being the Rasha of the story before the king? Esther invites him and the king to a mishteh, to a wine banquet. So the undoing of Haman is also revealed at a mishteh, at a wine banquet. And therefore, the reason why we were required to drink on Purim and to have drinking as part of the Sudas Purim was to recall that all of the miracles unfold through this vehicle of the drinking of wine. But even despite that reality that drinking wine on Purim is part and parcel of the Suda, that's only for the sake of fulfilling mitzvos and not to get so drunk that it becomes an impediment. Adeloyada, what does it mean then to get to the point of no longer knowing? V'zeh lashon ha-me'iri. Now he's going to quote an early Rishon the Me'iri. Chayev adam harbot b'simcha b'yom zeh u'ba'achila u'b'shtia ad shelo yechzar shum davar. A person is required to be really happy on this day and to eat and to drink until he feels nothing is lacking him. And despite this, the fact that we're supposed to be happy, we're supposed to really go all out and have a blast, we can't get drunk to the point, we are not commanded to get drunk to the point that one would disgrace themselves in the midst of their joy. We are not commanded to rejoice in a way of inappropriateness or stupidity. Ela besimcha shel ta'anug sheyagia mitoch ha'avat Hashem yiparach v'hoda'a anisim she'asa lanu. But rather the happiness that comes with the fulfillment and recognition of our love for God and thanks, expressing our thanks and appreciation for all the miracles that he's done for us and continues to do for us. And you can see, he says, look there what the Meiri does, says further in explaining our Gemara. Now he's going to quote the Chaya Adam, a 19th century Hungarian halachic authority. Since all the miracles unfold through wine, since, once again, he reiterates, since all of the miracles unfold through this vehicle of the wine banquet, we are required to drink wine at this meal, a little bit more wine than normally, in order to recall these miracles and how they unfolded, this great miracle that unfolds to the vehicle of the wine banquet. Va'amnam, but, says the Chai Adam, Hayodeya ba'atzmo, a person needs to know themselves and know their limits. She is alzel or az b'mitzvah, min ha-mitzvahs, if he is going to somehow not be able to perform any of the mitzvos, b'netiyat yadayim, and washing his hands, u'brecha, or reciting brechos on food, u'birkat ha-mazon, or to bench, or shelo yipaleh mincha o'mariv, or he gets so plastered that he can't daven mincha o'mariv, or that they behave in an inappropriate way, in any way, mutav shelo yishtaker. Underline these words. It's better, mutav shelo yishtaker, that they shouldn't become intoxicated at all. V'chol ma'asav yiyu l'shem shemayim. All our deeds need to be for the sake of heaven. Ad kan l'shano. That's the end of the words of the Chaya Adam. So seemingly, just to review, at least reviewing the halachic text, seemingly, there is an idea of drinking wine on Purim. There is an idea of commemorating the miracles that unfolded through the vehicle of the Mishteh Yayin, of the wine banquet, to recall those miracles. But the halachic sources seem to reiterate over and over again that a person needs to know their limits and needs to realize that drinking to the point where we disgrace ourselves, or drinking to the point where we will not be able to fulfill any of the mitzvos of the day, is not what our Chazal had in mind at all when we talk about Chayev Inesh Lebesumei Bepuria. Okay, if that's true, what does that expression really mean? What does it really mean, Chayev? As I said in the onset, I think anyone who knows me, I am a Purim Jew all year long. I'm not just a Purim Jew, I'm Purim, okay? I am someone who likes a good l'chaim. I'm someone who loves the simchas l'chaim that Purim represents. If this is all true, how do we understand what this Gemara is really teaching us? Okay, mechayev inish lebesumei b'puria adla yada ben ar haman lebarach Mordechai. And I think in order for us to understand this better, we need to return now. We looked at the halachic sources. We need to kind of put on our mystical glasses once again and return to the masses of Jewish thought. Mechayev inish lebesumei b'puria. The Ger Rebbe, the Chiddush Yarim, explains, this is not on your sheet, he explains our Gemara as follows. It doesn't say chayev inish lebesumei b'puria. A person is required, but rather mechayev inish lebesumei b'puria. One who gets drunk on Purim is mechayev, is liable, says the Ger Rebbe. The Ger Rebbe says Purim is such an awesome day that someone who gets intoxicated to the point of those in our story where they completely lose all control, the Rabbi and Rebbe Zera story that we looked at in the Gemara, that kind of drunkenness where we lose all control, says the Ger Rebbe, such a person is mechayev. He is liable and responsible for his transgression. Okay, the Gemara doesn't say chayev adam, a person is required, but mechayev adam lebesumei b'poria, someone who gets so completely plastered, like our story of Rabba and Rabbi Zera, says the Ger Rebbe, is held accountable for that drunkenness. So take a look. We're going to hear back again from the Slonim Rebbe now, a little bit longer piece than we saw in the introduction. Look at how the Slonim Rebbe explains this. Chayev inish lebesumi b'poria ad lo yad ben ara Muhammad lebarach Mordechai. Hinei chiyuv zeh, this is text number seven, I believe, yeah. Hinei chiyuv zeh, hu min advarim amufla'im b'purim. This obligation to become intoxicated in Purim is one of the perplexing ideas associated with Purim. Okay? Shari Purim yom gadol v'kadosh hu ad ma'od. Purim is a great and sacred day. V'harbe inyanim niskavim klulim bo. And many lofty ideas are included in this day of Purim. Shehu ki yom kippurim. It's like Yom Kippur. V'yom Kabbalah Satorah d'hadar kablu beratzon. That's like a second Kabbalah Satorah where we actually willfully accept the Torah. Hanabu madrega yoter gavar mimam at Sinai. That is to say that Purim is on a higher level than when we stood at Sinai. V'gam et mechiyat Amalek. And it's also the time of the destruction of Amalek. Uvo kol haposha yad netonin lo. And our Chazal teaches anyone who extends their hand to us on Purim, anyone who extends their hand on Purim, everything will be given to him. Ulechora, derosh lechoze harbe yishuv adas. And therefore, it would seem at first glance, if Purim is really all about all these lofty ideas we just touched on, that it would seem that what is required on this day of Purim is harbe yishuv adas, tremendous amount of spiritual clarity. So if Purim needs clarity, the Rebbe's asking, if Purim is about yishuv adas, spiritual clarity, how could it be, how would you understand this idea of chayev inish lebesumei b'puria, that a person is required to get drunk, intoxicated on Purim? And that's what the Rebbe asks. How do we reconcile this need for spiritual clarity on this lofty day of Purim with the obligation to become intoxicated on Purim? He says, but if we look carefully, closely at the language that's actually used in this Talmudic teaching, we can find the key to understanding all of this. Chayev inish lebesume bepuria, and it's bolded, the word puria. A person is required to become intoxicated on Purim, or with Purim. Doesn't say chayev inish lebesume beyayin or beshechar, says the Rebbe. The Gemara doesn't say a person is required to drink wine or to drink alcohol mashke, but rather a person is required to become intoxicated bipuria through Purim itself. The law amru l'besume b'yayim ela bipuria. The Gemara doesn't say drink and become intoxicated with wine, rather through Purim. Shishtaker mi'apurim atzmo. You should become intoxicated, celebratory, lost in the essence of what Purim itself is all about. Like one who is completely in the moment and lost in the moment, but not through wine. But rather, what are we drunk with? What are we excited about? All the lofty ideas that come into this world on this awesome day of Purim, one day a year. The gifts and yeshuot that the Rebbe spoke about in the introduction, that come into the world for all of us, the potential for bracha and yeshuot that comes into our lives on this awesome day of Purim, that's what we're celebrating. That's what we're drunk from. We're overcome with the happiness and the opportunity to receive those yeshuot and those brachot. Okay, let's build on this idea. Chaim. We're now going to hear from Rav Shlomo Aviner. Rav Shlomo Aviner Shlita, the very distinguished Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Hater Kohanim in the Old City, the chief rabbi of Beit El, one of the great, great lights of the religious Zionist world. Rav Avinair is also one of the great teachers of Torah Rav Kook, of the teachers of Moreno Rav Kook's Torah. And Rav Avinair is going to keep this mystical frame of mind and thought going with this next piece. Uvechein Aleinu Ravim, we have to understand that just as Blessed Mordechai has a purpose in this world, Gam La'ar Haman Yesh Tafkid, so too Cursed Haman has a purpose in this world. Get ready for this one, because now the fun starts. Baruch Mordechai Bigamatria Aror Haman. Baruch Mordechai and Aror Haman are the same, made up of the same numerical value. They're both connected and part and parcel of the same divine calculation. It's true, Mordechai is good and Haman is wicked. That's how things appear to us in the world of knowledge, of the peripheral, of the limited, of the boundaries, and of separation. V'ulam, but, kesh'anu modim she'eneinu yodim, but when we acknowledge that which we really don't know, kesh'anu mitzrobamim l'mekevan i'ayidia, when we begin to contemplate the unknown, anu ro'im she'advarim asotrim mit'achdim yachad, we begin to see that the ideas that initially seem to contradict one another come together as one. In the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there are many powers at play. Those energies that move us, propel us further ahead, and those that hold us back. And all of them are included in God's ongoing calculation and supervision. Aror Haman and Baruch Mordechai, from our perspective, it's very clear who is an Aror Haman and who is a Baruch Mordechai. But the message of Purim, says Rav Shlomo Avinair in this beautiful piece, is embracing the unknown, acknowledging that things are not always exactly as we perceive them to be. They are not as we see them to be. My great teacher, Rabbi David Aaron, has a beautiful mashal that I think really, really teaches us, clarifies this idea for us very, very powerfully. If a person walks into an art museum, okay, and you see all the beautiful paintings hanging up on the wall, so while we walk through the hallways, we see masterpieces all over the wall. But if we were to literally put our face right up against each tapestry on the wall, what would we see? We'd see a bunch of ugly squiggly lines and random blotches of paint that seem to make no sense. Because when we're looking at it, while we're in the midst of the experience, so to speak, when we're in the midst of that tapestry, when we're looking face on, head on, at those blotches of paint and squiggly lines, we see the ugliness and randomness. It's only when we take a step back and begin to take in the entire tapestry that those random ugly blotches of paint and those squiggly lines come together and we begin to see something magnificent. The reality of our perception is limited. On Purim, we acknowledge and embrace that which we don't know. We acknowledge and embrace this idea that things are not truly as we perceive them. And let's build on this idea a little bit further. Come. We're going to hear again from the Nesiv HaShalom now, the son of Merabi. Uberpurim Chayv, this is text number 9. Uberpurim Chayv Adam Lebesume Ad Layad Ben Arar Haman Ulebarach Mordechai Sheze Inyan Mitzas Mishlach Manos Ishlerehu. Oh, this idea of not knowing between Cursed Haman and Blessed Mordechai is also personified, says the son of Rebbe, through another one of the mitzvahs of the day of Purim. That's the mitzvah of Shalach Manos, of giving the Shalach Manos to our friends, to one another. In order to increase friendship and unity and respect, mutual respect. Because the Rambam taught in the name of Chazal, what is the mitzvah of love your neighbor as yourself? That you have to love your neighbor literally as you love yourself. You have to cherish him in the same way. That's the highest level. To learn to love and respect one another, no matter what circumstances they are, no matter how we may perceive them. If we find someone as being annoying, a little bit annoying maybe, we have to look inward and work on ourselves on Purim to see them and embrace them and love them. Okay? If we find someone to be maybe even an Arar Haman, okay, not just annoying, but we see this person not being such a good person, we need to look inward and see that maybe he's really a Baruch Mordechai. Let's move on. Here's another very powerful idea. We're going to hear from the Rebbe of Amshinov. This is text number 10. V'nimsa d'hashtiyah shal perem migale hapnimiyot shal bli gvul sheyesh etzel kol achav echad. We find that the drinking on Purim reveals the inner reality that there are really no boundaries between one another. That every single Jew has a neshama, a soul, that is an actual portion of divinity from above. Rak shehu behester. Okay? It's hidden within us. We can't see, we can't look in the mirror and say, oh, there's that neshama spark. There's that spark of divinity that I know is there, but it's there. It's hidden within every single one of us. Okay, the inkain nase murav tovara. Okay, if that's true, what happens to that neshama if it's within us and it's hidden within us? That spark of divine goodness gets mixed with what else? Our yetzahara gets influenced by the yetzahara, which is also inherent within every single one of us. Okay, v'adam tzarich lachof hara la tov. But a person has to literally submit the ra to the good in order that what? We should transform ourselves to try to be completely good. This idea is what is revealed when we drink on Purim. This is what it means to drink to the point that we no longer know. That everything should be good. D'chol kilkul ba me'akilkul arishon shehu achet shel eitz hadat tovira. All destructive behavior and destruction that comes into the world emanates from the initial destructive behavior that came into the world. And that initial destructive behavior was a decision of Adam and Chava to eat from the tree of das, knowledge, tovira, good and bad. The Ramban famously teaches us on that pasuk that before Adam and Chava ate from that tree of knowledge, good and tov v'ra, good and bad, Adam and Chava only knew tov. They only knew good. They didn't know anything else but goodness, complete goodness. It's only when they eat from that tree of knowledge that they become knowledgeable of the kochos hatuma, of the kochos hara. And therefore, when we drink on Purim to the point of Adelo Yada Ben Arar Haman, which is Ra, which is wickedness, and Baruch Mordechai, which is good, Tov, says the Amshinov Rebbe, we are making a tikkun, a fixing for the original transgression of eating from the tree of knowledge of good and bad. Adelo Yada, getting back to the point of no longer knowing, returning to the state of consciousness, of heightened consciousness of goodness that man, humanity was at before the transgression of eating from the tree of knowledge, good and bad. That is, on Purim, we have the capacity to return to that level of no longer knowing, that is, to fix the transgression of the Eitz Hadat, of eating from the tree of knowledge. And to arrive once again to that same level of spiritual consciousness that Adam Arishon possessed, that before the Chet, he did not know the difference between good and bad. All Adam and Chava knew was Kulo Tov, was only good. Rav Kook, in 1935, on his last Purim holiday, Rav Kook wrote the following article for the Hayesod newspaper. What is the significance of the rabbinical precepts to drink on the holiday of Purim? The Talmud teaches Nichnas Yayin Yatzah Sod. Wine enters and secrets emerge. In our lives, said Rav Kook, we very much need the secrets to come out and be revealed. Through the revelation, we can perceive what is hidden in our souls and recognize our true inner selves. When we reach the level of intoxication prescribed by the sages, so that one does not know, Adilo Yada, we free ourselves, at least temporarily, from all the, quote, knowledge deluding us, says Rav Kook. We shake off the accepted certainties that conceal the hidden truth. Sometimes, Rav Kook says so powerfully in this piece, sometimes the things that we perceive as being correct, our knowledge becomes an impediment to spiritual growth and achieving true clarity. The things that we intuit as being correct and being the truth, in reality, are anything but the truth, says Rav Kook. And this sacred day of Purim, this day of Adilo Yada, of embracing the Iyadia, of embracing that which we do not perceive and intuit on our own, is an awesome, awesome day. So, with everything we've talked about up till now, setting the stage, I thought we might explore one other idea that's associated with Purim. And to do that, I just need a second. Hang on. And that is, of course, one of the ideas associated with this awesome Yom Tov of Purim is the idea of dressing up in costume. So what is that all about? What is dressing in costume, putting on silly clothing or clothing that we would never think of wearing normally on the sacred day of Purim really all about? And in order to understand this idea, we're going to look at a few psukim together. We're going to start in Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther, of course, begins with the Suda, the wine banquet, that Achashverosh, the Mishnah, that Achashverosh throws for his entire kingdom. And the Megillah begins with telling us that Achashverosh brings out all these lavish foods and lavish accoutrements, and the Pasuk Vav, Chor Karpasu Tcheret Achuz B'chad Leibutz V'argaman Aglilei Chesed V'amudei Shesh. This Pasuk is traditionally read not in the normal way in which we read Megillat Esther, but in the Nigun, in the tune that we would normally chant, Megillat Eicha, okay, the Megillah of Lamentations. Because according to our Chazal and the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yebet, what is being paraded at this moment before the entire kingdom? The spoils from the Beis HaMikdash. The elaborate vessels that the meal was served on were none other than the very kelim from the Beis HaMikdash. And these elaborate garments that Achashverosh is parading before everyone on display, Achashverosh comes to that banquet wearing the big day kahuna, wearing the various garments of the high priest. By the way, that's actually not the only time we see these big day kahuna mentioned in the Megillah. As a matter of fact, when the story is turned on its heels and Mordechai is paraded through the streets, Mordechai is restored to his position of nobility that's due him as the Gadol Ador,
What happens? Take a look at your next text. Mordechai yatzam lifnei ha-melech b'levush malchut. Mordechai departs from before the king, and he's dressed in the royal garments, the same royal garments, say our Chazal, that were mentioned in the onset of the Megillah. Take a look. Techelet v'chur v'ateret zahav gedola v'tachri boots v'argaman. The very same garments that Achashverosh wears to the banquet. Meaning Mordechai, the Gadol Ador, is paraded through the streets once the story turns on its heels. Mordechai, the Gadol Ador, is paraded through the streets not only in the royal garments, but in the Bidei Kahuna. And on one hand, that seems at face value like a beautiful idea, a total tikkun, that Achashverosh HaRasha wore the Bidei Kahuna, and now the Gadol Ador is wearing the Bidei Kahuna, except there's one very big problem. When we're introduced to Mordechai in the onset of the Megillah, we're told that he is what? Ish Yemini. He's a Benjaminite. He's not a Kohen. So how could Mordechai HaYemini, okay, Mordechai, the Gadol Ador, the great Torah scholar of the generation, the great tzaddik of the generation, how could he, even in this moment of salvation and recognition for Torah, that he's being restored to a position of nobility, how could he allow himself to be paraded through the streets wearing the Bidei Kahuna? Good question, right? I'm going to ask you another question. Where else do we see these Bigadim of the Kohen Gadol make an appearance in the Megillah? So take a look at text number 14. Vayhi bayom ha-shlishi v'tilbash Esther malchut. On the third day, before Esther is about to go before the king to invite him, to invite Achashverosh to come to the banquet that she is going to prepare for Achashverosh and Haman, v'ta'amor b'chatzar beit hamelech ha-pnimit. Esther puts on, once again, v'tilbash Esther malchut, the royal garments, the noble garments, and she stands in the inner chatzer, the inner chamber of Hamelech, the king. Now our sages teach us, and I think we're all familiar with this, that any time in the Megillah that the word Hamelech is not immediately followed by the word Achashverosh, who is the Melech that's being referred to in that pasuk? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So check out this idea. We mentioned in the onset that Purim is Yom Kippur. It's like Yom Kippur. What happens on Yom Kippur? The Kohen Gadol puts on the Begadim. He goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to lobby on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael that they should receive Yeshuot, redemption, and Kapara, and forgiveness, atonement. This is Esther HaMalka's Yom Kippur moment. This is the linchpin of the connection between Purim and Yom Kippur. Esther HaMalka realizes at that moment that the Jewish people are in terrible, terrible peril and danger, and she must take matters into her own hands and puts on those big day kahuna and goes into the proverbial inner chamber. Again, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash at that point, but she goes to daven before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's as if she's standing in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, our Chazal say. Esther HaMalka puts on those Bidei Kahuna. It's her Yom Kippur moment. It's a very powerful idea. But again, we're left with the same question. How could it be that Esther HaMalka, just like we asked about Mordechai HaTzadik, how could it be that Esther HaMalka dons the Bidei Kahuna? So the Maor V'Shemesh, one of the great Hasidic masters, he basically suggests something very beautiful. He says, we know of other instances in the history of the Jewish people, in the history of humanity, where circumstances required someone to disguise themselves in clothing that would not otherwise be appropriate for them in order for Yeshuot and Brachot to come into their lives. And the two examples that he cites are two examples that are here on your sheets. The first example, of course, is the one that we're all familiar with Yaakov Avinu disguising himself as his older brother Esav, in order that he shall receive the brachot, and that the legacy of the Avot should continue through Yaakov Avinu and not be passed and transmitted to Esav. And of course, the other example that he cites is the famous example of Yehuda and Tamar, that Tamar disguises herself as a harlot in order to deceive her father-in-law, who refused to allow her to give her late husband a Yerusha by fulfilling the mitzvah of levirate marriage. And therefore, Tamar deceives her father-in-law Yehuda in order that a child should be born and the bloodline of her late husband should continue. And in both of these circumstances, says the Maor Vashemesh, it seems at face value as terrible acts of deception. But in reality, in each of those circumstances, because someone was ready to disguise themselves in clothing that might not otherwise have been appropriate for them, that might not otherwise have been comfortable for them, it's that very act of face, which at face value seems like an act of deception, of disguise, that enables the brachot to come into our lives. Purim is all about letting go of our preconceived notions of all the things that we assume to be correct, of stepping out of our comfort zone and putting on clothing and silly clothing that might not otherwise be comfortable for us, in order that we should be open up our minds and our hearts to receive those Yeshuot that come into the world one day a year on this sacred, awesome day of Purim. My bracha for all of us is that we should indeed embrace this idea and acknowledge this idea of the Iyadiyah, of that which we do not know, and that we should all be zocha, merit, to receive only blessings and Yeshuot, blessings and redemptions and miracles, both this Purim and each and every single day of our lives. Have a great week.